Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host Danny coming to you for episode number 42, the Elio Di Silvestro episode. Chucks is looking at me with a blank face, so obviously
you've lost me. Talking about. You've lost me.
Youth keeper?
Youth left back, I believe.
Left back. Okay. Yeah,
you're pulling these. I think this is the first time you just made a name up. I'm going to call it. I think this is the first time you just made a person up.
I definitely remember him. I just didn't remember where he played.
Was that like your high school buddy or something?
Yes. my boy, Elio. Elio Di Silvestro, I believe, still playing professionally somewhere in Serie G. So good on him. Anyways, this week we are in the international break blues. I guess, thankfully for us, it's been a rather quiet international break in terms of Juventus-related things outside of transfer speculation. Because when there's an international break, the newspapers, outside of when Italy plays, need something to talk about. So before we get to the speculation, let me bring in the usual crew here of Samuel Pressy. Hello, Sam.
Greetings, Danny.
We've got Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Hey, good evening. And you know, it's funny with the shirt numbers and stuff. I swear, next episode, you might as well say, episode number 43, we've got Captain America. And I'll believe it. I'll believe it. Captain America probably played for Juventus once upon a time.
Why are you taking my surprises away from me, Chucks?
Hey, man, it's keeping you on your toes, man.
Last but not least, Sergio. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas, happy to be here. International break and whatnot, but still, always good to pod with you guys.
But your international break was filled with a New Mexico kit. So what were your thoughts on the New Mexico kit, Sergio?
Yeah, I'm split. I don't know. I wake up one day and I like it, and then the next day I think it's kind of crappy. Like, I don't know. I'm going to have to see it, like, in person, and then I'll decide whether or not to impulse buy it.
Impulse buy it, yes.
That seems like a very contemplative impulse buy. I don't know if that's... Does that qualify? I'm not sure.
That's an oxymoron right there.
All right. Well, as we mentioned, it is an international break. Say that three times fast. So there's a whole lot of non-on-field talk to discuss. And a lot of it for Juventus has centered around a certain guy who wears the number 10 who hasn't played in 2 months. So that is where we are going to start this week. So as I made my thoughts known about the whole situation a few days back, I won't ramble on, but it's obviously a very tenuous kind of situation, a very uncertain situation for Dybala's future. And just want to get your thoughts first. Let's go Sergio, since he is the Dybala train conductor on this blog. Your thoughts on everything that's surrounding Paulo Dybala these days.
Yeah, I consider myself one of the foremost Dybala stans in our little community, in a little corner of the Juventus world. But, you know, yeah, it's not great. It's not the best thing ever, to be honest. It's so weird because out of all the things that have happened this season, and there's been a lot of things that have happened this season, the fact that Dybala has played very little, and that when he played, he was either ineffective or out of form, or you know, whatever you want to call it. We kind of forget that Juventus has been, for the most part of the season, just without the MVP of the whole damn league. Like, I mean, we just kind of forgot about it, and we just kind of decided to move along without him, and just kind of periodically remember that, oh yeah, like he actually won the MVP of the league last year, but he's just kind of been absent pretty much the whole 2020, I'm pretty sure. And you know, we saw him rather sporadically in 2021, I mean, and we saw him rather sporadically in 2020. So you know, I think there's been recently a bit more, I've seen more like tweets and comments about that, you know, that we might have underestimated his actual, you know, presence, his actual impact on the team. And I agree. I think losing a guy like him, even at his worst, he's still the type of player that can change a game, you know, with one touch, with one pass, with one shot. And we saw him, you know, when he was actually starting to play a little better, and we were starting to get in in form and shape in that, I guess he did play in 2021, now that I'm thinking about it, in that Milan game, right? Like he was key in that game. He had the two assists for the Chiesa goals, and like he was finally starting to kind of like become a real factor. And then he got that mysterious injury that has been, you know, on and off. I mean, we've been hearing about him coming back all this time, like every other week, it seems like. And now Juventus has painted themselves into a corner in which, what do you do? Do you sell low on your number 10, on your, you know, anointed face of the team? Do you sell low on him coming off his worst season as a pro, pretty much? Or do you give him that, you know, reportedly probably exaggerated raise he wants to renew the contract? Like they really put themselves in kind of like an untenable situation. And yeah, it's one of those things that it definitely the Juventus board has to bear some blame, but it's just been the circumstances. It's just been COVID. It's just been so many things that put them like put Juventus and put Dybala and put everyone in this just really, really crappy position to be in. And, you know, I just hope both as a fan and both just thinking logically, I hope they don't end up selling low on him. They don't end up, you know, letting him go for nothing to some, you know, Premier League team or whatever. But, you know, who knows? I mean, the first and foremost, he has to come back on the pitch, and we still don't really know for sure when that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's such a strange situation. It's because on one hand, it's like, I remember I'd mentioned that in the Slack channel that we have, you know, where I was thinking like, wait, how long have negotiations been going on for, you know? And I mean, I guesstimate kind of over a year that negotiations for his,
it all started around the beginning of March last year. So right before everything shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, it's weird because yeah. And that's an interesting timing as well, because basically before everything shut down, so there's no football happening. And obviously, I mean, there's terrible things going on in the world. So, you know, not that everything's fun and well, but, you know, there's no football going on. So you would think that they would have all the time and no pressure to just sit down and negotiate, or I guess over Zoom to negotiate over a new contract. So there's clearly no lack of time. I mean, and there was the summer they played the season. But basically, yeah, they've had over a year to negotiate and still we're at a stalemate. You know, that tells me something. Like, that tells me that, I mean, surely both sides in all this time have tried everything. Like, you know, I imagine negotiation going like, okay, Juventus puts in an offer, you know, Dybala and his agent consider it, put in a counter offer, Juventus consider it, you know, then they say, okay, yes, no, maybe on this and that, but we don't quite like these positions. And, you know, you go back and forth, so that at least each side has like, what, 2-3 opportunities to put in their positions or their what they want to offer, which, you know, I imagine shouldn't take longer than a year. So the fact that it has taken this long really tells me that something's up. And I want to believe that both sides have done everything they could to be reasonable, because I mean, Dybala and Juventus in general, as far as I know, they haven't ever had any kind of ill will or any kind of beef or any, like, you know, any kind of really markedly negative issues together. I think it's the relationship between Dybala and Juventus, from what I know, has just been normal. I mean, just as with any other, you know, as with, again, from what I know, I haven't read anything truly serious over the years that Dybala has been here. So, you know, that makes me wonder, okay, what's up? Like, you know, what could be the problem? If there's no negative kind of ill will between the parties, and if they've had presumably the time to both put out all the positions, all the things that they're looking for, then to me it just says that the two just don't agree. Like Juventus and Dybala just don't agree on, you know, well, obviously on the contract, but on like their relationship together. And it does remind me, I read like over a year ago or so, I read these two books on negotiation, which are really, really great books. One of them was Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. He's a former FBI hostage negotiator. Really, really good book. And
Paulo Dybala is a hostage.
well, we're all hostages because we work for the man. That's why we work for the man. Capitalism. That's why. I can edit that out if you like. So there was that one, and then getting to yes by I think Roger Fisher. But basically, you know, the one point that these two books, that these two authors made in their books, like in negotiation, you have to defer between or differentiate between negotiating on interests and negotiating on positions. Like, I think, okay, from what I remember, a position was just like kind of the smaller picture thing, but like an interest was like the bigger picture. Like, so, you know, for instance, you could negotiate on a raise of X percent, but then your position could really be, well, I want a raise of X percent because I want to feel more valued or more important in a team, or I want the team to be built around me. And therefore I want, you know, I want to be top dog. And then the way to signal that is by having the highest salary, like, you know, just kind of a random example. So I really wonder what primarily Dybala, but also Juventus, what their kind of big picture positioning is. Like, what does Dybala want? Does he want, I mean, obviously we'll never know, but I wonder if he wants the team to be built around him, or if he wants to be the top earner, or if he wants certain tactics to be played, because I mean, he's played with, what is it? Three different coaches now. Yeah. Three different coaches, with Allegri, Pirlo and Sarri. So, I mean, he's, you know, played in 4-2-3-1s, 4-4-2s, 3-5-2, 3-4-3. I mean, he's played seconda punta, he's played false nine, he's played on the right wing, sort of. Like, he's played a whole host of positions throughout his time. So maybe, I mean, I don't know, I'm totally just speculating here, but maybe there's something with that as well. Maybe he wants to, you know, say, okay, I want kind of just one position to play, which I wouldn't blame him. I mean, he's, you know, he's been tossed around all over the field. So basically a bit of a long-winded answer there, but I just wonder what the bigger picture positions of both Juventus and Dybala are, and you know, wonder kind of why they can't agree on that. Because it can't be just money, surely it can't. I mean, negotiating it over a year for just
money. Of course
money,
it I can.
Mean, I mean, but negotiating that long for just money, I don't know. I mean, that's, yeah, I don't know. To me, yeah, I don't know.
That's the thing, though. And when it comes to contract negotiations like this, of course it can be just about money. And, you know, I personally feel like this probably wouldn't have been that much of a thing had lockdown not had to happen, had COVID not been a thing. I don't think we would have had very many problems with this, especially given the season Dybala had last year, which, by the way, was a message season for him when he came back after refusing to leave the team after Fabio Paratici had two separate deals supposedly lined up to send him off to England, to either Manchester United or Tottenham. And he said, no, I'm staying at Juventus. And, you know, he scored that goal, that first goal of hit that he scored in the friendly, and pointed to the back of his own shirt and said, yeah, this is me, I'm here. I truly think that he very much loves this club and does not want and wants to be a part of it. I think this is a question of, does Juventus have the money that he wants in a post-COVID economy? And the answer to that is probably no right now. You know, and it goes on, and it's frustrating to me just looking at the situation that we're going to be looking at in the summer. You know, a couple of us have touched on this before. Like, you take, you know, your two big attackers, you're either getting rid of Ronaldo or you're getting rid of Dybala this summer to raise funds. If you're still going to go with this idea of have a coach that does a more modern passing focused, pressing focused kind of system, Dybala is the one you want to keep because he's the one that fits that better. Now, obviously there's a lot of underlying stuff. We still don't have a definitive word on whether or not Ronaldo is going to stay on the team next year, even though the front office has been very, very loudly insisting that he will be, which says to me that there's a little bit of panic in that circle. I don't want to see him go. And part of that is sentimentality. Part of that is, I think he is the better building block for the future, unless you scrap yet another project after only one season and decide to just completely throw your chips on a year of Ronaldo. But it doesn't seem to me like that's a good idea, first off, because, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be 38 by the end of next season. And Dybala has represented this club. He has fought for this club. He has fought to stay at this club. You know, he went out in the Lyon game in August, clearly not 100%, and just tried to do something. And of course he couldn't, his leg gave out again. But like, that's the kind of devotion to the club we're talking about. It would be a real shame to me if he was the person to leave coming out of this whole situation.
I think Sam here makes a key point, and that is, you know, when, and Chuck's also alluded to it, right? Like how long this has been going and when it started, because if you see it from after the, you know, Sarri season, COVID, you know, kind of the first weird COVID season, he was like I've been saying, he was the MVP of the league. He played fantastically. He showed that he can play with Ronaldo. He fought to stay in the club. Like he did, like Sam said, like he did, like he put his body on the line in that Lyon matchup. You know, there's not a lot more that you could ask from him. There's not a lot more you could ask from your number 10, from your, you know, face of the club or whatever you want to call it. And after that season, Dybala is asking, like, listen, I think the reported thing is like 15 million euros, I think, or something like that, or 12 or 13. Like, I don't know the number, but I want this amount of money. It's like, you know, you deserved it. You played for it. You definitely deserve it. But now it's the COVID thing. Now they're running short of funds. Now he's been gone the entire season. And I think that's what the thing is. Like, okay, you know, we didn't close it at his peak. Now, are we going to close? Are we going to give him that money now? You know, 1 year after his peak, a year that was a complete wash for him, a year where he was pretty much a non-factor. Are we willing to do that? And I think that does, you know, it takes into account a lot of things that Sam was saying that are much more, you know, I don't know if emotional, esoteric or whatnot, that he is your number 10. He fought to stay in the club. He clearly loves the club. He has sacrificed for the team. Do you reward that by actually giving him what he wants, despite not coming off his best season, despite coming off a season in which he had a weird injury that kind of wasn't that much big of a deal, but still kept him away for like 4 months? Do you take that shot? Do you take that risk as a kind of reward for that? Is that the club you still are? Or are we just no longer that club and just look at Dybala as an asset and see, like, this dude is, you know, he's very talented. He's one of our better players. If we have to sell a guy, he could give us the most amount of money. So we're just going to sell him, period. And that's what we're going to do. And if that's what they decide, that's fine. But, well, I wouldn't like it, but that's fine. But then let's call Juve a spade, and let's just say we're no longer allowed to make the whole, oh, lo stile Juve, and like our coaches don't like wear suits and all that. Like, we're no longer that, okay? Like, we're just no longer that. We're just another club. We play by the same rules. We just sell players. The number 10 shirt means nothing. Like, let's just call it what it is. And if that's what we want to be, to, you know, go wherever we want to go as an organization or as a team or as a club or whatever, then let's do that. Then that's fine. But then let's not pretend that we're still somehow a classy run organization and all that type of stuff that we love to tell about, like we love to talk about ourselves, because you're just not. If you just treat your number 10 player like your face of the franchise, the dude who put his body on the line for the club, and you just sell him at the first bad season he has, then you're just no longer that. And that's fine. But let's just acknowledge that then.
I gave up that romanticism when we bought Ronaldo, honestly. I accepted our fate as a brand. Ugh, I hate that word. As a brand.
I think it was the logo change for me. It was the logo change for me. That's what, like, okay. Yeah, yeah. We're putting this in towels and stuff. Like, we're, yeah, like, okay, yeah, cool. That's who we are now.
Yeah, that's true.
By the way, you can get your Juventus bath towels at the J store.
We have a J hotel. Like what? Like what's up with that? Like, let's come on. Like, we're a brand. We're a brand now, and that's fine. But let's stop. Let's stop making a big deal because our coach doesn't wear a suit. Like whatever, man. We're a brand now. Like, that doesn't matter.
You poke fun at the J hotel, but it's come in handy for when the club has to go in isolation.
True. I'm sure that's what they wanted. They wanted the J hotel to be used for.
I'm sure they'll do the J hotel bundle it like Amazon does, bundle it with everything, so you can get your J hotel and your J TV and your J bath towels all for a handy little fee of $999.99 a month. But no, I hope not. If we go the path of Amazon, I'll be damned at all if we go the path of Amazon. But to bring it back to the
back about, on topic, Chucks.
Yeah, I know. I always go on tangents. You know that by now. But yeah, it is weird with Dybala. I mean, I don't know, because on one hand, I feel like Juventus doesn't really want to sell Dybala because, I mean, they opened negotiations for contract extension. So they said, okay, hey, we want to extend your contract. We want you to continue to be here. And then, obviously, again, both parties come to the table, we explain each other's positions. And then, now we've come to this point where they just aren't able to agree. So, I just don't feel like, I think if Juve really wanted to sell Dybala, they would have started negotiations for an extension at all. But I don't know. I mean, I might be wrong on that. That's just kind of my gut feeling on that. But I also feel like a lot of Juventus fans, and myself included to an extent, are just kind of frustrated with Dybala, the player, that is. For me, the main frustration was that final against Real Madrid, in which he did get a red card then. Yeah, he did get.
In the quarterfinals the next year.
Oh, wait, sorry. Quarterfinals. Yeah.
In the final, it was when Sergio Ramos punked the referee and Cuadrado had gotten the.
Sorry, but it was in the final where he played poorly. That I remember that, where he just like really underperformed. And then, yeah, I always mix up the two.
So did everybody, but.
Well, of course.
Yeah, they did lose 4-1, so pretty much everyone underperformed.
Yeah.
Shout out Mandzukic, though. But, outside of him, pretty much everyone did.
But I think everyone always expected Dybala to be like, there was always the hype on Dybala of being like, the one above all kind of player. And it's just, it's coming, flashes. Obviously, he had the MVP season, which granted, I didn't really agree with the MVP award, honestly. I didn't think I thought he was good last season, but I thought he was above average, like definitely very good. But I thought best of the league throughout the season. I thought that was flattering to say the least, but I mean, to me, I've just always had kind of lingering frustrations with him. Like, okay, if you're really supposed to be, the one like standout player, just in some games, the Real Madrid games, the two games frustrated me immensely. Because I feel it's just, there are higher expectations on him than on other people, because it's like, he is supposed to be the one, he's, the number 10 that we build around the team, which again, we haven't, and in his defense, we haven't actually built around him, really built a squad around him, which I think is a real failure of the management. And
yeah, I was about to say, have they really, truly built a squad around him since he's obviously had those first couple of years where he was really, really good?
Yeah. And that's a failure.
You look at the last year with Allegri, the biggest thing was he was out on the right. He was on playing out of position. He was basically forced to be a winger when he's obviously not a winger. And then obviously with Sarri, it was a slow build up to him really finding form. And then he was playing very well. Shutdown happened. And then he was really good after the restart. And then this year is kind of like, okay, he's got injury rehab. He's coming back. He was slowly introduced. And then he was finally kind of slowly rounding into form, and then knee injury happens, and now he's been out for 2 months. So, as much as we say he's potential face of the team or the club, the team has never truly been built around him and his talents, I think.
and I think what Danny's saying is massive, because we forget he came in that, I believe, 15-16 season. And then immediately after, which he was great, he was clearly like a breakout type of performance for him in his first season as a UVA player. And then the next season, they bring in Higuain, another dude who like immediately kind of forces him to change his type of play, change the way he plays. And then when he finally seems to figure out how to play with Higuain, then they bring in Ronaldo, another dude who you have to kind of like blow everything up to kind of fit him in, and he has to adapt again. So I think that's another thing that, you know, kind of sometimes it's under discussed with him, that he has had to change a lot and to, you know, to kind of like be very adaptable. And more or less, give or take, he has been pretty successful in every single season outside of this one, for all the reasons we already discussed. But even with all those changes, even with all that, you know, adaptability, if you will, he's still been able to perform, and he still has been able to put numbers. So yeah, I mean, I think it's something that's kind of like underrated about him and his Juve career.
Yeah, and again, the one thing to, you know, to Dybala's credit is that he has adapted very well just to the constant changes tactically around the team. But, and that's why what I mentioned earlier is I wonder if one of the sticking points in negotiation for Dybala is like, hey, I want a team built around me, basically, or just at least a team that isn't going to change tactically significantly, like every year or every year and a half, you know, which I think would be a fair demand. I mean, if I were him, you know, if there is this expectation of him being, you know, the number 10 and the standout player, obviously next to Ronaldo, but being just having this above average expectations of him, then I will say, I mean, I think he has the right to make a demand of, like, you know, tactically, like, hey, I want a squad that's going to be somewhat built to me and or Ronaldo and or Chiesa. So, but yeah, sorry for jumping in there.
I do think that what you were saying, Sergio, I think points to the weakness of the weakness of the front office in really kind of reaching for whatever they, you know, starting with Higuain. And, you know, Higuain wasn't exactly the most, you know, that wasn't exactly a particularly disruptive acquisition tactically, and certainly not as much as Ronaldo. But like you said, you know, here's Dybala having, he had two fantastic, he had two, one really good year, one, and then, you know, in comes Higuain. He's he's your alleged missing piece. And Dybala and Higuain dovetailed pretty well together, but you're not giving this guy who had been one of the bigger attacking purchases Juventus had made in years at that point, you're not giving him what he really needed to succeed and become that face of the team. He's just had to adapt over and over again to whatever Andrea Agnelli and the rest of the front office kind of thought was the missing piece for the Champions League that year. You know, because the Champions League did become very much become the obsession. We're all, you know, we all talk about it. And you know, I talk a lot about, you know, Beppe Marotta and the club moving away from him in that same summer that we signed Ronaldo as really a turning point for the dynasty and where it allowed teams to get back in Serie A. You know, now I'm starting, but, you know, looking on that, and I'm starting to wonder if it was even a little bit earlier than that people above Marotta were starting to try to push him into doing things that he might not have really wanted to do. Because clearly having him building a really competitive team at your biggest rival was a bad idea. And it just, it makes you wonder, you know, Chucks, you're always talking about, you know, what is, you know, what's the plan? Where's the plan? And it's starting to look further and further like they, at least in terms of, you know, your premier acquisition every year, they are just trying to, like, you know, I always make the joke about Florentino Perez at Real Madrid, he looks, he goes, ooh, shiny. And he buys it, you know, like James Rodriguez at the World Cup in 2014. Ooh, shiny. You know, Gareth Bale. Ooh, shiny. And, you know, when you look at, you know, Higuain at Ronaldo, De Ligt a little bit less so, because the center back core certainly needed an injection of youth at that point. But I think that the team has really lost its way in that respect, in terms of planning for the long term. You know, maybe and part of that, I think, is that we were a victim of our own success, because, you know, no one was expecting Conte's first year to be the year we won the Scudetto again. They were just hoping that we'd make the Champions League, you know. And, you know, all of a sudden here we are winning, you know, not only winning undefeated, but then the next year just, you know, starting this utter dominance. And they tried to accelerate the process before it was really done. And that's never a good idea. That's never a good thing. So I'm hoping that the team starts getting, this is why I always talk about not wanting Pirlo to go too, because I'm hoping that the team starts to buckle down and realize that they have to, you know, do something a little bit longer term now, because, you know, now that this cycle is at an end, they have to actually build again, instead of just trying to slather on whatever paint or spackle or whatever they think will fill a hole enough to get them somewhere in Europe. This has got to be done the right way. And if that means, you know, a year or two of, you know, second, third, fourth place finishes and enduring a little bit of pain, then so be it. But you've got to do this quick, because otherwise Milan and Inter, what they've done the last decade is front and center, the warning for what happens when you do what we look like we've been starting to do for the last couple of years. And that's not something that we want to see.
I will add this before we get to the Twitter questions. And it's obviously something I mentioned in my post, where there just doesn't seem to be a middle ground when it comes to Dybala. It's either contract extension or he's leaving. Because it's just, you know, not only does he not deserve another year of just this complete uncertainty regarding his contract extension, but obviously Juventus and the financial climate there, and they can't afford to have him leave or potentially leave for next to nothing or nothing. And then, you know, the potential money in the COVID era that could be as a result. And I know some members of the Italian press who cover Juve have mentioned maybe Dybala is part of a Pjanic-like swap deal where both, you know, the books look good and then you get a player in return. But I mean, just what if you had to bet, I mean, do you think he's gone? Do you think he's staying? I mean, it's either or at this point. It's not like, okay, we can see him staying, but, you know, there's still the contract to be solved. There's only two true outcomes here for me, and it's either door number one or door number two.
I think the logic part of me thinks that he's going to be gone, because when you look at this roster, just from a standpoint of, you know, forget who plays well, forget who's good, forget who's bad, just, you know, clinically, just cold-hearted, like, and you just look at this roster and you see who's a valuable asset. You really have two or three players that could really move the needle when it comes to getting transferred out, and that's Ronaldo, that's De Ligt, and that's Dybala. De Ligt is untouchable. Ronaldo, if you believe what the public opinion is, at least coming from Juventus, is that he's untouchable as well. Just logically, then that leaves you with Dybala. And, you know, if that's the plan, I don't think that is the correct choice. I think that would be selling low on one of your best players. And maybe if it's a quote unquote financial doping move like they did with Pjanic and Arthur, maybe that makes a little bit more sense than just outright selling him for like 30 or 40 million euros. But, you know, that's just going to be sad. that's just gonna suck. That's just gonna mean that they're stuck with the Ronaldo plan and they're gonna see it through. That has some sort of merit, I guess, but you know, I just don't, it wouldn't feel right to me to just let go of a dude who's in his 20s, who's in his prime, who had a, you know, bad season of luck, to build around and to kind of put all your chips in on a dude who's going to be 38 and who, you know, I mean, I know he's Ronaldo. I know he's one of the best players to ever do it, but it still doesn't seem to me like the most sustainable move of them all to kind of like just do the Ronaldo thing and yet another year. Like, it just doesn't seem to make sense to me with the roster they have, with the coach they have, with it just doesn't make sense. But if they're just married into the idea and they're just gonna see it through no matter what, then we can pretty much kiss Dybala goodbye, because I just don't see another player who could possibly have the same value as Dybala does.
Yeah, I unfortunately agree with you. Which is hilarious, because anything that we manage to, you know, unless we do a Pjanic swap of some kind, and even then, like, you know, given the current financial climate, sell Dybala and that basically funds like almost the last year of Ronaldo's contract. and that's why when it comes to the, you know, sell Ronaldo, sell Dybala, thing from a financial standpoint, I just look at it and go that, you know, I to me, it's a no-brainer that you have to try to offload Ronaldo, because, you know, you can sell Dybala. How much of that money are you really going to end up being able to use to make meaningful additions to the club around Ronaldo? Not nearly as much as if you had gotten, you know, whatever transfer fee you managed to get for Ronaldo, plus getting all his wages off the books. That would have a far more positive impact on any sort of potential transfer war chest and being able to make moves in the future. But I think you're right, Sergio. If they, you know, unless they are just blowing too much, unless they are blowing so much smoke over this to try to, you know, to give themselves some sort of negotiating power when trying to find a partner for a Ronaldo exit next year, I think that we probably have seen the last year of Dybala being on the team. And that is a really, 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 it sucks, because he deserves a lot more than that. And it also, I think, will affect the roster construction going forward and whether or not we'll actually be able to be better next year.
Which don't discount it, by the way, as Chucks was alluding to it earlier, or, you know, master negotiator Chucks, like, you can't go out and say, oh, we're definitely selling him. Like, obviously, like, you lose all sort of, you know, leverage. So like you said, like, it very well might be a front facing thing to say that, no, we're definitely staying with Ronaldo. We're definitely not selling him, and do all of that lip service to kind of like not lose leverage. That could definitely be the case, but I don't know. They just seem very much kind of like married to the Ronaldo experiment. And given that if things break right next year, they finally might be able to return to welcome fans back to the Allianz Stadium, maybe they finally do see some sort of returns of the whole Ronaldo experiment, right? So maybe they're looking forward to that, but it's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
There's also the wild card option, which is door number three, and that's pulling a Lewandowski, which is to let him run out his contract and leave for free.
That's not going to happen.
I mean, I said it's a wild card. I mean...
That'd be the bow on the, you know, present of incompetence and just sheer buffoonery if they did that, like, just let him go for free. I mean, that would suck. But then again, just at this point, with Juventus, you can't count anything out, I guess.
Well, isn't that the move that allowed Mario Mandzukic to go to Atletico Madrid and then subsequently Juventus? So
it is, yes.
It is a wild card. Yeah.
Well, what say you, master negotiator?
I mean, I say play a dice and hope for double sixes. That's all I can say. No, I have no idea. I genuinely, who knows? True. I'm just some guy.
You're just some guy on the internet.
Yep, I really am.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's fire up a couple of Twitter questions here. Sticking with some transfer stuff. First from a friend of the podcast, at Bocce Sabi, does Manuel Locatelli's goal against Bulgaria earlier today mean that his transfer tag is going to go up to $50 million?
Hope not, because I really want him on the team, and I want that to be as easy as possible. On the clearly that goal today did show you just how good he is. And it's actually, I found it interesting because I was watching that game, and Italy didn't have a whole ton of really clear-cut chances over the first two-thirds of that game, that qualifier against Bulgaria. And when Locatelli came on, they carved out a lot more. There were a lot more really, really good chances leading up to that goal. Ciro Immobile bottled a couple of them, because when Ciro Immobile puts on the Italian shade of blue, he turns into a freaking pumpkin and doesn't do anything. Rant over. But there was a distinct uptick in Italy as an attacking force in that game once Locatelli made it onto the pitch. And I don't think it's a coincidence. And he has so many skills that in this team right now for Juventus, no one has. And, you know, if you need something to tie up this midfield and all of a sudden make it a midfield that can actually work together as a unit, as opposed to just a bunch of guys who do the same thing really well, he is the guy that you need. And, you know, if that means, you know, I'm usually very loath to use the youth system as, you know, the make weights and the, and stuff. And I really, really like Nicola Fagioli. If getting Locatelli means parting ways with Fagioli, it would suck, but also I could take it, especially because Locatelli himself is only 23. Like this is another thing. Locatelli is still a very young player. He's been in the eye for a really long time because he started very, very young coming out of AC Milan's academy. I remember, I bring these times up when I was at Bleacher Report a lot, but he did come up that during the years that I was covering Milan, and I kept on saying, why aren't they playing him more? And, you know, you remember a couple of years ago, that screamer of a shot that he had against Juve to win that game at the San Siro.
I remember that specifically.
That was, you know, at the time Milan was terribly managed, and they let him go for practically nothing, and he's built himself into one of the most desirable Italian midfielders out there, desirable midfielders period out there, because it's not just Italian teams that are looking at him. You know, that's the thing that's worrying me, is like the names like Manchester City start coming out, and they'll be able to make any deal that they kind of want regardless of COVID, because they have the crazy oil money. That said, Juve's relationship with Sassuolo is excellent, and it always has been ever since Sassuolo got into Serie A. So from that standpoint, I think that could, you know, certainly help, and also depends a lot on where Locatelli wants to go. But I think if any transfer strategy for the summer has to start with him. And, you know, and if you can manage to, by some miracle, do that and Hussein Aouar in the same summer, because he started popping back into the news connected to Juve in this last week as well, because Mattia De Ciglio apparently really likes it in Lyon and wants to stay. And some people are saying, hey, what if we got 10 million
and going back to pay dividends? All right.
What if we knock 10 million off of Aouar with De Ciglio? We'll see, you know, maybe that'll work. But I mean, Just Locatelli himself would be great. Locatelli and Aouar in one summer, if you can somehow pull that off. Yeah, that's a midfield I'd, you know, those two and McKennie, that's a midfield I wouldn't want to play against. hopefully whatever negotiations that that the team has kind of entered into, which, you know, Danny also had a breaking news, you know, had a news article about that this coming week, or this past week rather. You know, hopefully those will, you know, that will be closed with speed. And because I really think that this game was, and he was only on the field for about 20 minutes, but this game was a microcosm of why Juve need a player like him so much.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. Just, I mean, he's a very necessary player. I think, you know, I haven't actually seen him play live too much, but I've only heard good things about him. So, you know, only heard excellent things about Locatelli. I guess the only thing I would mention is if we did manage to get him to Juventus, someone would have to leave, surely, because we do have a bit of a bloated central midfield. Then, I mean, plus him, we would have quite a bloated central midfield with
the rumors that Rabiot and Ramsey are both looking like Premier League candidates.
Yeah. I imagine Ramsey. I mean, my patience has run out with Ramsey, frankly.
My patience was out with Ramsey at the end of last season. So,
man, you're a killer, man. Ruthless, man. Ruthless. No, I gave him a lot of opportunities, but yeah, my patience has run out with him. So I imagine Ramsey would leave. Speaking of salary and making space, you know, that would be something off the wage book.
I saw another thing about the midfield today that was a Tutto Sport report that Bayern Munich are interested in Bentancur and that Juventus would ask for Leon Goretzka as a swap if they wanted that.
You gotta love Tutto Sport during international.
Yeah, but the thing is, ever since Ronaldo happened, it was Tutto Sport that broke that. So now you can't ignore it anymore.
I know, but still.
An exception to the norm doesn't disprove the norm.
Exactly. There's still Tutto Sport.
It's still Tutto Sport, but now you have to give it like side eye instead of just blowing past it entirely.
That would be daylight robbery, of course. But in all seriousness, though, I mean, Bentancur was actually the other person I thought, like, you know, would he? I mean, I imagine he would stay. I mean, again, I imagine Ramsey would leave. Rabiot, I would still like Rabiot to stay. But again, we've talked about kind of the redundancy that Rabiot and Bentancur have. So I imagine, I don't know, would one of them have to leave? I don't know. But definitely we would anyway need one central midfielder to leave. And I think highest on that list would, you know, surely be Aaron Ramsey.
I think we can all agree on the power rankings. Sergio might be adding this to his next grab bag, the power rankings of midfielders who will leave this summer.
Yeah, I could add it. Number one, Aaron Ramsey. That's already, I can.
Number two, can Aaron Ramsey. Number three, Aaron Ramsey.
No more Kedira though, Sergio, sorry.
No, that sucks though. I'd rather have Kedira than Ramsey, honestly. Like, we're being straight up, like.
Agreed.
All right, shall we do one more question, fellas?
Let's do it.
Hit me.
All right, from another friend of the podcast, David Desberg at the True ROAC. He had a scary thought the other day with his 33rd birthday around the corner. How should Juventus prepare for a life without Johnny Square? Other than Danilo, are there any young fullback options Juve should/must consider?
Damn, that's tough. I honestly don't know.
Everybody's stumped. All right, good podcast, everybody.
Well, no, it's funny because, I mean, Danny, you know that, you know, I have an article that's currently in the notes phase about this particular instance, about that exact question. And it depends a lot. First off, it depends on, you know, does Pirlo stay and you have like more of a wing back situation, or does Pirlo go and you end up bringing in a coach that, you know, might go back to a more traditional fullbacks? That's the first question. Second question is, you know, just how untouchable is Cuadrado? Because the last time I read any lists of the untouchable players, Cuadrado wasn't on it. They gave five players. I think it was De Ligt, Rabiot, no, De Ligt, sorry, De Ligt, Chiesa, Danilo, Chesney, and
McKennie?
And McKennie, I think. I think, you know, a lot of it will go down to what tactics do we end up using. In terms of one one particular player, the name Robin Gosens comes to mind. I've mentioned him on the podcast before. Especially if Juventus were to stay with a wingback system, he would really be excellent. Other than that, yeah, I mean, I always yell at Fabio Paratici over the fact that he seems to think that football can be played without fullbacks, but it's also very hard to, the good ones are really hard to find. You don't find like really high level Terzini all over the place. You know, it's really going to be a really interesting question to see what Juve might do on the flanks next year. Because you've got, you know, if you are going to a wing, if you are staying in a wingback system, you've got at least Cuadrado and Chiesa who, you know, can play, although both of them are better on the right. Kulusevski could also figure into that, but again, better on the right. If you end up with traditional fullbacks, goodness knows how you're going to end up playing it. Because Alexandro also looks like he might be on his way out this year, too. That's a really, really interesting question. And we're going to have to figure out, you know, we probably won't know until August how it actually ends up going down.
Paul Lirola. Remember Paul Lirola? Like he could be the guy. He could be the answer at the right flag. Like,
I don't even know if he's in Italy anymore. Didn't they sell him to Spain?
Yes.
Fiorentina like sell him to Spain?
I think they did.
He is currently in France.
France.
Oh.
With Marseille. So
good for Paul Lirola.
He is another one of the Serie A fullbacks who is now making their paychecks in France, like a certain Matteo Di Ciglio.
You know, and Alessandro Florenzi.
You know, the thing about this question, and the reason I bring Lirola is because I'm going to do the same thing that Sam did and just throw out a tease about the thing I'm working on for next week. That's what we do in the business as professionals, you know, to throw a tease out there.
Foreshadowing.
But, you know, I've been
foreshadowing.
Exactly. Because I've been going through like the transfer windows of Juve of the last like 4 or 5 years. And the more that we talk about and the more we have this discussion and the more we listen to what to do is, it just becomes so key to just know what the system is going to be, to know what your project is going to be. Because it doesn't matter if you bring in the best right back available that there is, if you're going to switch it up and play with wing backs, and then like you have to slot him in as a wing back, and it doesn't matter. So, you know, it's just going to be so important to finally just go into a season just knowing what are we going to do, and then we can start figuring out what to do in life after Juan Cuadrado. Because the other thing that I noticed is that pretty much, because in order to do this piece, I've been like going through old, you know, official posts in the site. And it's funny to see how many times Juan Cuadrado has talked about like, oh, Juan Cuadrado is on the outs. Like, we're definitely selling Juan Cuadrado. Like, Juan Cuadrado has no place in this team. And it's been going on like this for like 3 or 4 years. And every single year, not only does he stay, but he ends up being like a pretty good and important player for the team. So he's kind of one of those underrated dudes that you don't really think about, but he's already been here for like 5 years. Like, and he's a huge part of the team. So just shout out Juan Cuadrado. I think he doesn't get the respect he deserves, and just not only being a Juve player for a long time, but being a pretty damn effective player in all that time and playing all over the pitch and just being this flexible guy that you can kind of play everywhere. So good job by Juan Cuadrado, and it's going to be a pretty interesting thing to see what they do once Johnny Square is gone, and we'll check it out in the week in Sam's piece.
In basketball, they have you hear the term glue guy a lot. You know, the guy who the guy who isn't the guy, but he kind of still like, you know, he produces at a high level and binds the team together. And Cuadrado is absolutely that right now for Juventus. I mean, just look at the Benevento game. He was out suspended for yellow cards and the team had nothing without him there. if I had to put money on it, I'd probably assume that he's going to be at least on the team next year. But yeah, life after Juan is going to be sooner rather than later. And at that point you have to, you know, figure out who that next guy is going to be.
And I'll just add one thing that I think he's an example of a player who has just excellently rediscovered himself as he aged, or reinvented himself as he aged. Because obviously he started as a right winger all the way up front and then slowly edged back, you know, right midfield, right wing back, right back. And I think that's just an example of an extremely mature and just intelligent player, really. Because you think of the likes of other players that have done that, you know, Ryan Giggs did that. Wayne Rooney did that. Philip Lahm did that sort of as well. As they aged, they just kind of, you know, their bodies just kind of, you know, obviously as it happens, their bodies just kind of weren't able to handle the requirements. In case of Giggs and Rooney, weren't able to handle the requirements of their original positions. So they had to, you know, reinvent themselves and say, okay, how, in what position can I play that now suits my skills and I'm still able to physically handle. So, you know, credit to Juan for that. I mean, that's really, really impressive to do that.
Indeed it is. And on that note, we will wrap things up for this week's episode. As always, you can send us Twitter questions at Juventus Nation on the good old Twitter machine. You can follow us on there as well as Facebook. Search Black and White and Red All Over. If you want to follow us on any of your favorite podcast platforms, be it Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Podcasts, search Black and White and Red All Over. Shout out to Juventus women again. Drop 9 on Bari.
What Sharks. The heck? What did Pink Sport Bari do to them?
They're not very good. So
they're not. But like, they were at least holding it, and then they scored that one goal to make it 3-1, and it was like, all right, now we're mad.
Yeah.
It's like the Marvin the Martian. You've made me very, very mad.
Yes. Shout out Cristiano Girelli. Hit the 20-goal mark with 4 goals against Bari. So she is off and running once again after a short injury absence. But with all that being said, hopefully we have some good news to talk about next week as Juventus returns to the field. So for Sam and for Chucks and for Sergio, this is Danny saying thank you all for listening once again, and we'll talk to you guys next week after the Turin Derby.